Awesome Archaeology by Nick Arnold, the knowledge book read by Vianna Vance, illustrated by Clive Goddard. Introduction. Archaeology is dead awesome. That's because archaeology is about dead people and how they lived in the past. It's about dead ruins, overgrown and abandoned to the bats and snakes, or buried in the earth. And it's about dead bodies moldering in long-forgotten tombs. And when archaeologists dig up ancient remains, they come as close as anyone can to bringing dead people to life and talking to them about the past. Of course, archaeologists don't really chatter to skeletons or mumble to mummies. If they did, you might think there was something odd about them. But it's an awesome fact that archaeology can, in a way, bring the past to life by showing you what ancient times were really like. In this book, you'll discover what archaeologists really get up to, including their more embarrassing moments. Wow, it's the legendary jaws of Narthrakagok. Anyone seen my teeth? What archaeology is all about and how it can get under your feet. Some awesomely huge discoveries. How you can become an archaeologist. Bucketfuls and bucketfuls of dirty, disgusting, earthy facts. Stuff like the putrid secrets of prehistoric poo and skeletons and sinister tombs and how to mummify your brother or sister. Sounds good to me. And it all starts in the next chapter, where you'll be meeting the lucky person who discovered the most famous tomb in the world and the archaeologist who made a dead body into a mummy. He was really wrapped up in his work. So dig into the next few pages. You never know what you'll turn up. Dodgy Diggers. Before you tiptoe into any tombs or get to grips with mummies, you'll need the lowdown on archaeology. Vital info like the story of archaeology and which archaeologist jumped over a cliff and what it's really like to be an archaeologist. So where did archaeology come from? Yes, that's a good question. Excavating archaeology. Archaeologists dig into the present ground level, and as they go deeper, they find older, buried objects. You see, earth and rubbish build up over time, and so the deeper you dig, the further back in time you go. It's a bit like eating a lasagna. I hope your school dinner lasagnas don't ooze with ancient remains. Anyway, we're going to dig through the layers of time and unearth the story of archaeology. Today, archaeologists work in teams. They use computers to sort out their finds and scientific techniques to discover how old their finds are. Finds are the objects archaeologists dig up. 1969. An excavation in Illinois, USA, is one of the first to use a computer to record data on finds. 1960s. U.S. Marine archaeologist George Bass pioneers modern underwater archaeology. This proves that archaeologists can be really deep, and sometimes a bit wet. 1949 to 1951. Graham Clark is one of the first archaeologists to ask scientists to help explain what a place was like in ancient times. For example, plant experts advise on plant remains. Well, what did you think they'd advise on? Sticky buns? 1950s. Kathleen Kenyon, 1906 to 1978, excavates Jericho in Jordan. She is one of the first to use radiocarbon dating, see page 51, to find out how old her finds are. They ought to use this technique on the jokes in this book. 1920s. Leonard Woolley, 1880 to 1960, excavates the 5,000-year-old city of Ur in Iraq. He's so careful not to miss anything that he uses a toothbrush and toothpick to remove the dirt. Let's hope he didn't try to clean his teeth afterwards. 1900. Arthur Evans, 1851 to 1941, excavates the remains of Knossos, Crete, and finds a vast palace with some of the world's first toilets. 2800 BC. Of course, he's flushed with success. 1887 to 1898. Augustus Henry Lane Fox Pitt Rivers, 1827 to 1900, is so rich that he owns more names than anyone else. Anyway, he's also a general and introduces military survey methods to make detailed plans and excavations showing the position of finds. Modern archaeologists use similar techniques. 1870 to 1890. Heinrich Schliemann, 1822 to 1890, finds Troy and several lost Greek cities described by ancient Greek poet Homer. You could say that heroic Heinrich homes in on Homer's home. 1860. Italian archaeologist Giuseppe Fiorelli, 1823 to 1896, digs up the ruins of Pompeii, a Roman city buried by a volcanic eruption. The bodies of people killed in the disaster have rotted, leaving empty spaces in the lava that covered them and then set hard. Fiorelli fills the holes with plaster to make casts of the bodies. Sounds dead fulfilling, doesn't it? 1840s. Austin Layard, 1817 to 1894, finds the 2,500-year-old palace of the Assyrian kings in Nineveh, Iraq. He digs up gruesome carvings and sends them to London, where people flock to see the tasteful images of people being skinned alive. They're in the British Museum, if you fancy a peek. French archaeologist Emile Botta makes similar discoveries at nearby Khorsabad. 1798. Fearless French experts study the pyramids whilst a battle rages. I'm surprised their mummies let them out. Up until the 1700s, no one digs up ancient remains except to find treasure or something pretty to collect. And this certainly wasn't anything like modern archaeology. Now start working your way back up the layers. Awesome info. In the 6th century BC, Nabonidus, king of Babylon, set up the world's first museum of ancient finds from his city. Archaeologists have been searching for this museum in order to put it in another museum. Ask an archaeologist. If you ever chat with an archaeologist, you could test their professional knowledge. Which U.S. president was an archaeologist? Where did you dig up that question? Answer. Thomas Jefferson, 1743 to 1826, was one of the first people to keep detailed archaeological records. Before then, people simply dug things up and forgot where they found them. In 1784, Jefferson discovered that a burial mound in Virginia had been built in layers. In the lower layers, the bones were more decayed and seemed to have been buried longer. So Jefferson thought these layers were older. Well, you wouldn't call old Jefferson a lazy bones. Recent, a bit older, a lot older, really, really old. Early archaeologists made lots of mistakes. They didn't know how to work out how old their finds were and often destroyed the remains they were excavating by careless digging. One archaeologist who was often mistaken was German Heinrich Schliemann. Let's imagine Schliemann was interviewed on the telly. Yeah, okay, I know he died before telly was invented, but perhaps the TV company excavated his body for the interview. Back from the dead. Welcome to the program that digs the dirt about famous people. Tonight we're lucky to have with us Heinrich Schliemann, the discoverer of Troy. Your interest in Troy was sparked by a Christmas present, the works of Homer. Cough, cough. I've been dying for a good cough. Yes, Homer's where the heart is. I was just 10 years old when my dad gave me the story of how Troy was captured by soldiers hidden in a wooden horse. Dad, I said, I'm going to find Troy. Excuse me, I'm a bit hoarse just now. Cough, cough. When you grew up, you made a fortune trading with Russia, so you decided to spend your money finding the real Troy in Turkey. Well, I wasn't short of a few robles. Yes, I wanted to search the rubble, and I succeeded. But you didn't find Troy. It was us, diplomat Frank Calvert, who told you where to dig. And you dug trenches through Troy. Details. And you dug trenches through Troy and destroyed most of it. You found at least 9 cities, each built on the ruins of the one before, but you were so eager to believe the second city was Homer's. Troy, you smashed your way through the 6th city, which is actually the more likely candidate. Anyone can make mistakes. Whilst your workers took a tea break, you secretly dug up a haul of ancient jewelry from an ancient grave. Then you dressed your wife in it, and acted as if the treasure belonged to you. Yes, Sophia, my little treasure. You broke the law by smuggling the treasure out of Turkey. I made a grave mistake. But you can't put it right now because you're dead. Well, that's my funeral. But not all archaeologists ended up famous and successful like Schliemann, so grab a hanky, read on, and have a good cry. Unhappy archaeologists. 1. Victorian archaeology expert J.T. Plight spent years making beautiful detailed drawings of prehistoric remains in Cornwall, England, but no one wanted to buy his work, and as his money dwindled, he went mad and had to be locked up. His plight must have been desperate. 2. Native Peruvian archaeologist Julio Tello struggled to get into Harvard University, USA, to study archaeology. Driven by a powerful desire to discover his nation's history, he returned to Peru and found a richly carved temple. Studying the temple became his life's work. One night, heavy rain broke a dam, and the flood swept away Tello's museum of hard-won finds and buried the temple in mud. Tello said, "Thus vanished the dreams of the artist and architect." "And the archaeologist, too," he might have murmured. Tello died 2 years later, a broken man. 3. Australian Vere Gordon Childe, 1892 to 1957, put together the available information and figured that farming began in the Middle East after a dry spell caused a food shortage 10,000 years ago. Later, archaeologists found out that there was no such dry spell. As the evidence built up against him, Childe got depressed and jumped over a cliff. So what's it like being an archaeologist? Is it all doom and gloom, or does the job have its brighter moments? You'll be finding out in a moment, but first, can you work out which of these is the genuine job advert for an archaeologist? 1. Are you fit, good-looking, and a bit of a hunk/babe, but very sensitive and brainy, too? Would you love to explore romantic places and find lost cities and buried treasure? Would you be thrilled to be famous and on the telly all the time? No autographs, please. Yes, there's a great future in the past. 2. Archaeologists wanted. Are you living in the past? Are you ready to scrabble for days in a cold, muddy trench, strain muscles you didn't even know you had, and all you find is a grotty old bone that's unfit for the dog? Are you unfazed by awesome ancient bodies, rotting ancient poo, and rotten but not so ancient biting bugs? If so, you probably need specialist care. But you could be an archaeologist. It's a down-to-earth career. I found it! Don't insult me. So did you spot the genuine advert? 2. Sigh. Afraid so. You see, being an archaeologist is hard work, and it can be very boring, and you don't even earn much money. But before you throw down this book and switch on the telly, read this. Official apology. We want to apologize for saying that archaeology is all hard work. Archaeology is only hard work 99% of the time, but there are gobsmacking, heart-pounding, dribble-dropping moments that make it all worthwhile. And here's one of them. Wonderful things. Egypt, 1923. The heat was stifling. Sweat matted the man's dark hair and trickled down the neck of his white starched shirt and dripped on his grubby white linen suit. He was in his 40s, a large, thick-set man, not given to showing his feelings, apart from short bursts of temper. But now his big hands were trembling. His name was Howard Carter, and the whole of his life had been leading up to this moment. The candle flickered in the musty air as he scraped impatiently at the small hole, opening a window in the crumbling plaster of the blocked-up doorway. What lay beyond? Was it an empty chamber, or perhaps? As Howard Carter worked, his mind filled with memories. He remembered washing dirt off finds as a teenager on his first archaeological dig. He thought of his years of working for the Egyptian government and searching for the tomb of the boy king Tutankhamun. And he thought of the moment just a few weeks earlier when one of his workmen had found a flight of steps leading into the ground. Here, on the very last spot Carter had thought to look, was the lost tomb. At last, the hole was large enough to peer through. Oily smoke curled from the candle wick, and the flame flickered in a sudden drought. After images flashed before Carter's eyes and the dancing shadows seemed to glitter. What was it? Gold? Yes, it was the glitter of gold. He heard a soft voice in his ear. Can you see anything? Lord Carnarvon, the man who had backed Carter with his own money, was anxious for news. He was a pale-eyed figure with a strained, pockmarked face. Yes, Carter gasped, I can see wonderful things. He could see golden thrones carved like animals, gold-painted statues, and golden caskets stacked with jewelry. There was gold everywhere and treasure beyond his wildest dreams. Excited whispers filled the air as the news passed amongst the people waiting behind Carter. But Carter was still staring into the room with a dazed look. He no longer noticed the sweat that trickled down his dusty face and soaked his shirt. He was gazing at a place that had been forgotten for 3,000 years. That's 50 lifetimes. He breathed stale air that had been trapped since the days of ancient Egypt. And Carter knew that his life had changed. Yes, it had changed forever. In the coming weeks and months, the discovery was front-page news and the papers went wild. Delhi News, November 1922. Fit for a king. Howard Carter has made the greatest archaeological discovery of all time. Archaeologist Carter, 48, said today, "This is as good as it gets." The Australian Sport, November 1922. Tootin', come in. Proud palmy digger Howard Carter smiled by the Nile as he hailed the biggest bomber-whipping treasure trove in history. New York News, November 1922. King Tut is found. Howard Carter has made a real swell find. Unlike the other tombs in the Valley of the Kings, this one hasn't been turned over by hoodlums in ancient times. The Cairo Times, March 1923. Latest news from Tut's tomb. The tomb contains 4 rooms packed with thousands of priceless treasures, including 3 golden coffins shaped like the king's body, and placed one inside the other, a solid gold death mask, the king's personal furniture, clothes, jewelry, and games. Said Howard Carter, "There's even more here than we imagined. It's going to take me ages to study." And for more info on the finds in Tut's tomb, see page 80. The story grabbed the public's imagination. It sparked new fashions for ancient Egyptian-style clothes, jewelry, and decor. And of course, the world of archaeology was thrilled too. Here's an archaeologist to explain why the tomb was so important. As good as it gets. Only 2 lost tombs have been found in the Valley of the Kings in the last 100 years. Almost all Egyptian tombs were robbed of their treasures in ancient times. It's rare to find a pharaoh's mummy. Many of them were destroyed by robbers. Lucky old Carter. Sigh. Awesome info. And talking about mummies, mummy expert Bob Breyer actually made his own mummy to investigate how the Egyptians did it. He cut open a dead body using replicas of ancient Egyptian tools and preserved the body using the same techniques and materials as the ancients. You can find out what this involves on page 146. Bob showed some archaeologists a slideshow of the gory goings-on, and some of them felt rather unwell. Perhaps, like the mummy, they got a little wound up. Mummies, the inside story. But there's much more to being an archaeologist than DIY mummies and finding lost tombs. Before archaeologists discover anything, before they can even start digging, they have to find a site. That's a place to dig. And that's what the next chapter's all about. So read on. It's a site for sore eyes. Secret sites. You're not allowed to start this chapter until you've read the following important warning. An important warning. Archaeological sites can easily be damaged by careless visitors. Here are three things you shouldn't do if you want to stay out of prison. 1. Don't dig up the countryside. Chances are someone owns the land and there's a danger of getting your leg chewed up by a savage guard dog. Or it's even more savage owner.
Grr, grr.
2. Don't dig up parks or school grounds. You might end up being chased by a murderous, half-crazed park keeper, especially if your excavations destroy his prized dahlias. 3. Don't use a metal detector to search for finds. Say metal detector to archaeologists, and you'll get a dirty look, and a few might even burst into tears. That's because some metal detector owners have actually robbed archaeological sites. Still reading? Great, now on with the chapter. I should point out that it's perfectly okay to look for archaeological sites, just so long as you don't break these rules, and I know just the book to help you. Archaeology for Beginners by E.C. Peasy. Introduction. Archaeology, archaeology, archaeology. I love saying that word. You see, archaeology is just so wonderfully, super-duperly cool. I've been an archaeologist for 47 years, and I still can't get enough. It's great, wonderful, fantastic, because you can do it without special gear or years of knowledge. And that's what this book is all about. Archaeology for Beginners. Chapter 1. The Right Site. So welcome, budding archaeology dudes. The first thing you'll need to be an archaeologist is a site to explore, and I know just how to find one. Step 1. Grab a map, unfold it, make sure the cat doesn't jump on it, and check a few place names. And get this, some place names give you clues to the local archaeology. I mean, imagine somewhere called Bone Hill. It might just be a hill containing, hey, that's right, bones. So maybe it's an old burial mound? Street names may also tell you about an old site. Guess what you might find in Castle Street or Abbey Road. Step 2. Hold it right there, dudes. Before you grab your shovel, there's something else you just can't do without. Info. More clues as to what the site was used for. So make a beeline for your local library and dig up some facts. Has anyone found old pottery or coins on the site? Are there any creepy old legends? Old tales can provide clues about the history of a place. Step 3. Done that? Great. Now it's check out the site time. Take a little snoop around. Spot any worn-looking stones that might have been part of a wall? Stones from ancient sites were often reused, so look for some in the walls of old houses. So how wall you get in? Step 4. It's time to test your detective skills to the max. Yes, it's eyes to the ground and take a good look, but don't go sneaking into the gardens without permission. Here are a few things to look out for. A line of scattered stones might mark the line of an old wall. Well, stone me. Old pottery and bones on the ground. They're not any old rubbish. Chances are they're archaeological old rubbish. If you spot lots of this stuff, it might mark the remains of a house or settlement. Well, that remains to be seen, haha. Step 5. And whilst you've got your nose to the ground, why not get friendly with the local plants? I'm serious. Plants tell you about the past if you look for crop marks. Whoops, a bit of jargon there. Sorry, dudes. Crop marks suggest where a site might be buried. Try here. Tall plants may show the position of a ditch that has been filled in. Short plants may show a wall under the ground. Step 6. Just before sunset, you may see something weird at the site. Hope you're not scared of G-H-O-S-T-S. Younger archaeology dudes will need an adult with them. Yes, the low light shows up bumps and hollows that you won't spot at any other time. A dip might mark a pit that has been filled in. A bump might mark the remains of a wall. But dudes, mind you don't trip over any of these or you'll have an archaeological bump on your bonds. Awesome info. 1. Stinging nettles often grow on sites of old ditches or pits. They seem to like dug up soil. Nettles also like soil rich in a chemical called phosphorus found in animal dung and bones. So a clump of nettles might hide an awesome archaeological secret. 2. English archaeologists are staging the world's slowest experiment. In 1962, they made an earth bank and ditch and buried various finds in it. The plan is to keep checking the site until 2088 and find how a real site changes over time and how quickly objects rot in the ground. The news so far is that the ditch is filled with soil and the buried fabric is falling apart. 1962, 1999, 2042, 2088. These human remains are fascinating. Sensational sites. Archaeologists find old sites using the techniques E.C. Peasy described. Many discoveries are made by chance. Farmers plow up fields and turn up old pottery, building workers dig the foundations of a new hotel and unearth skeletons, and people do stumble across sites. Yes, I mean stumble. In 1982, archaeologist Francis Pryor found a 3,000-year-old wooden platform originally built over a swamp. Well, actually, he tripped over one of the timbers sticking out from the ground. The remains at Flag Fen, Peterborough, are now open to visitors. Enjoy your trip, dear! Once archaeologists have found a site, they want to know more, and there's a real fun way to do this. Take to the skies. When you're on the ground, it's hard to make sense of all the bumps and crop marks. But from a plane or helicopter, you get a bird's-eye view of everything. Look, there it is! X marks the spot. No, that's a crossroads. You can see how the marks and bumps reveal the outline of an old building. Yes, it's plain to see. And you might spot nearby sites and get an idea of how many people lived in the area in the past and whether they were living in farms or larger settlements. Archaeological info. One of the first aerial photos of a site was taken of Stonehenge in 1906. In 1913, archaeologist Sir Henry Welcome rigged up a new high-tech aerial device to photograph sites in Sudan. Oh, all right, it was a camera tied to a kite, but it was cheap and cheerful. Watch the birdie. Squawk. 2. In 1980, American archaeologist Kent Weeks made an aerial survey of ancient Thebes in Egypt. He and a colleague flew in an old bomber and took pictures by leaning out of the bomb hatch. Every time the plane rolled, they nearly fell out. Sounds plain crazy to me. Bombs away! Checking out the countryside. Archaeologists are keen to find out what the area around the site would have been like for people in ancient times. Which of these methods seem useful and which definitely isn't? True, false. 1. They examine the contents of an old rat's nest. True. In southwestern USA, pack rat nests contain dried pea and rat droppings and dead leaves which last hundreds of years in the dry desert climate. Archaeologists study the leaves to find what kinds of plants were growing when the nest was made. 2. They look for long dead beetles and snails. True. Beetles and snails are fussier than the most pampered pussycat. The choosy creepy crawlies only live in certain areas. Some prefer swamps and some prefer woodland. By noticing the ancient bugs they find, an archaeologist can get an idea of what the area was like. 3. They break open rocks to search for fossils. False. Fossils take thousands of years to form, and any fossils an archaeologist finds would probably date from long before people lived in the area. 4. They study ancient pollen, the dust made by flowers. 4. True. Protected by a strong casing, pollen grains last for thousands of years. Since every type of plant produces differently shaped pollen, you can tell what kinds of plants grew in the area in the past. And since plants, like bugs, are choosy about where they live, you can get an idea of what the landscape and climate was like. Is that clever, or what? And now for some exciting news. An archaeological dig will be taking place in these very pages. In fact, it'll be happening as you read through this book, so you'll be the very first person to find out what happens. Look out for live updates from The Dead School. Part 1. A Whole Lot of Trouble. Killam School was an ordinary, boring, average school. Of course, it had its share of mad kids and cruel teachers, but then, what school doesn't? Amongst the children who attended Killam School were three friends.